Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
Welcome back. Earn Your Leisure, episode 11. We are back. 11 weeks in,
man. Yeah, 11 weeks in, man. It's unbelievable.
The support has been unbelievable. Thank you for everybody who's tuned in to YouTube, who subscribed it, everybody on Instagram. Our growth has been monumental, man. It's more than we could have ever expected. So this week, we got something special. We got something special planned for y'all. We usually save the last segment of each episode for our story time. But this week, we had to start with it. And Rashad, we got a special guest.
We have a special guest this week. So if you know, story time is usually the last segment of the show. And we highlight entrepreneurs and businesses and like the backstories and interesting stories about business, how they actually got to that point, like how Airbnb got to be an Airbnb and how Google got to be Google. But people like that segment, but they were asking for more relatable stories and to bring, you know, a business owner and that is from the community, small business owner, success story. So we said we would, and we kept our word, and that's what we are doing this episode. So we're gonna give you the backstory. We're gonna reverse engineer the show. We're gonna do story time first, but it's not gonna be over at story time. After story time, then we're gonna give you the blueprint, because this show is about entrepreneurship and business, and we're gonna actually give you the full blueprint of what it takes to run a successful business, how you get financing, the day-to-day operations, all of that stuff. And our guest, we have a very special guest, like I said, we have Derek Falcon, and Derek is a business owner. He has a restaurant and food trucks in Baltimore, Maryland. And if anybody's not familiar, Baltimore has a special place in my heart because I went to school in Baltimore for 2 years. And if you listen to the podcast, you know that I went to school everywhere in the country. So Hawaii, Florida, Baltimore, Massachusetts, and that's because I used to be an exceptional basketball player. Exceptional? Would you say, Troy?
Yeah, you were good, man. You were talented.
I wear many hats. So Baltimore, shout out to Baltimore, shout out to Maryland, Montgomery County, PG County, shout out to D.C., shout out to Virginia, the whole DMV. We have love for DMV. So we have Derek, and I'm just going to give the quick... I'm gonna start at the beginning and then the end, and then Derek's going to fill in his story. He's going to tell the story time for himself, because who can tell a story better than the actual person? So we're going to start at the bottom to the top, right? So Derek got out of jail, and 6 years later, he has a restaurant and 3 food trucks that are bringing in, well, the restaurant alone is bringing in $15,000 to $20,000 a week.
A million dollars a year.
That's not sure.
The year sounds better than a week. So $1 million a year in revenue. Okay.
That's now, the end goal.
I queued it up for
so,
you.
So now, ladies and gentlemen,
Derek's going to tell his story.
It is story time. Here's a little story that must be told. Listen up, gangsters and honeys with your hair done.
Best storyteller, thug narrator, my style's greater. All right, so, you know, I started, I guess I would have to say I started in the fitness industry. And then, you know, I started in the fitness industry and I wanted to focus on something that I was more passionate about, which was, at the time, and still is, interior design, fashion, music, and food. And I felt like a restaurant was a place where you could bring all those things together. So me and my brother started in 2014. We got a small space, but we didn't open it up until May of 2015. And then once we opened it up, that space became extremely popular. And it got to a place where, like, the customers would be waiting outside before we even opened. So we clearly came to the consensus that we needed a bigger space. And when I got the restaurant, I got it with the food truck attached to it. So the restaurant was $5,000. Mm-hmm. So I had the $5,000. And they gave me an entryway to the restaurant, which created a relationship with the woman who had the food truck. So I was like, all right, cool. You know, it's natural for me to accumulate, for me to get the food truck, because I'm like, it goes hand in hand with the restaurant. And then that led to the restaurant doing really well and us moving to a bigger space. Once we moved to the bigger space and we were able to really expand our brand, it provided opportunities for us to get the other two trucks. So we're really excited about that. The trucks are a different dynamic than the restaurant, obviously. The restaurant is more of an experience. Mm-hmm. The truck is also somewhat of an experience, but more of a fast casual appeal to it. And it has really allowed me to expand the brand in a very organic, very grassroots type of movement. Because like it's with the trucks, people see you everywhere, and we have the Cracked Egg logo, as you guys have seen it. So the Cracked Egg logo being everywhere creates market share and brand awareness. So for me, I'm big on a wealth strategy and, you know, what part am I going to play in the history books in terms of influencing the culture, inspiring the youth, but also making sure that we got some real tangible assets in the mix.
So you, so when you started, you actually, all right, so can you talk about a little bit, like, you, so you were in prison, right? Then you came home and you were living in your dad's basement, right?
Yeah, I came home. I was living in my dad's basement. I stayed there for about 6 months. It allowed me to accumulate the money that I had to invest in the store. So I took a huge sacrifice. And I always say, like, you know, happiness is the ability to subordinate what you want today for what you really want tomorrow. Like, you know, like, you can leave out of here and you want a Benz, but you really want a jet. You know, just stay down until you get what you really want. Mm-hmm. So I had a lot of grit and determination as to what I wanted, and I saved, and it allowed me to get that first Stone food truck.
That's important because delayed gratification.
Hey, about that a lot. Right?
Delayed gratification. Yeah. And like you said, you got to stay down until you come up. So the fact that you were able to stay in the basement, humbling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Humbling experience, but you saved your money and you got your first restaurant, you got, and then you build from there. And that's important, right? It doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, because a lot of people want to get rich with contingencies. Subject upon this, if it looked good this way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Me, I'm an end result type of guy, so I'm not really caught up on how I get there. Like, if we leave out of here right now, we try and get in the city, it don't matter who drive. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It don't matter. You know, if a stoplight come, we're going to stop, but we're going to keep going. And I think for me, that's been my determination. Even with the trucks, it doesn't stop there. My plan is 4 stores nationally, 1 in San Francisco, 1 in L.A., 1 in New York, and maybe 1 in D.C. or keep the Baltimore one. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all mixed-use property, because that's what we have. We have the mixed-use property side. So, and all of them with a mobile presence. So like for me, I felt like, all right, well, if you got a store and then that's a brick and mortar, then you got a mobile presence. But then we got product. Like, we make our own jam from scratch that we sell. Mm-hmm. We make our own syrup from scratch. You know what I mean? And then you got these products, and then the products can go on a website. So now you have a web presence too. Just activating the streams of wealth within my industry. So I don't really have to do anything else for the rest of my life. I just got to keep milking this.
Yeah, master what you have.
That's important. Yeah. And then we were talking off camera. You said that you had a substantial amount of money going into business, right? Which is important. So can you talk about that? Like, because a lot of times people, financing is important and they don't have money to start a business. But you saved your money from working as
I saved my money. And then like me, I'm real scrappy. So I was willing to do whatever it took. But I had close to $100,000 when I started. You know what I'm saying? And people say, well, how were you able to do that? Like, you know, I saved and I stayed down, meaning like I stayed in my dad's house in their basement for 6 months, but then, well, my dad and my stepmom's house. And then also I built my credit up, and then I constantly got and credit increases, and I constantly was saving money, just hoarding cash. Like right now I'm hoarding cash for a big event. I want to do something comparable to like Broccoli City or, you know, Coachella and things like that. So I'm hoarding cash and I'm cultivating relationships.
Yeah,
that's always key. But it really ain't, it's hard, but it's not as hard as we make it seem. But in our culture, we refuse to sacrifice. So I've had conversations with people where it's like, oh, you know, I do want the business, but I ain't trying to stay with my mother for a year. Oh, you don't want the business.
You don't want it. You don't want it bad enough.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't want it. When you want it, you're willing to do whatever.
You're going
to
make that sacrifice.
Yo, I'm willing to do whatever. You know what I'm saying? So And I've done it all. Like I say, serving tables, bussing. I like the fact that I really put a lot of grit and sweat into my business because it allowed me to master all the different positions and the components and elements that go into what makes homemade homemade. I got better as time went on because my first restaurant took me 6 months. The second one took me 4. The third one, the supper club concept, took me 40 days. And then what's so sweet about the third one was it took me 40 days because I had partners too. And guys like I shout out like Randy Poblet and Kevin Vaughn. Because now I was able to get better and better. And that was really perfecting of one's craft. Because like now you go from the first store, me and my brother, 6 months, to the second store, me and my brother, 4 months. Then like now I got collaboration. So now, even working with Randy and Kevin, working with two other black men, seeing how easier they make my life has inspired me to want more collabs. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I don't mind reaching out to y'all and just really spreading the wealth because it's enough there if you got purpose.
You said something really important about homemade being an experience. You told us behind the scenes that there was a story where you were bringing the food out to people, right? Because that was something that you were doing in your everyday life, right?
Yeah, it was always the undertone to the restaurant is always my real life. Everything I do is my real life, you know what I'm saying? And I can't give you anything that's inauthentic. Mm-hmm. So I have to be who I truly am. And that's why, like you say, the hoodies and, you know, wearing like VaporMax and stuff like that,
yeah,
really come into what we do because we didn't need entrepreneurs, you know. We were born in the 80s and, you know,
that's how we dress.
Yeah, raised through the 90s. And this is what it is, yeah. And now it's a place where the dude in the VaporMax has employed the guy in the suit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's just what it is. Stop. Like, you'd be surprised, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I think that was important for me, being able to build out a brand in a way in which it could be authentic.
Yeah, so we went from homemade to the supper club.
Yeah, so the supper club is a continuum of homemade. It's more of a, it's a, like, you ever watch like a drama and you waiting for next week, like Empire or Power or something,
right,
like
that. Right.
So like for me, it took me so long because things had to be authentic. I really had to live things. And when I live things, and like for me, I'm a romantic type of guy. So like, everything for me falls back to a love story. Like even when I design, it's a feel.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, this person made me feel this way. And now I'm going to manifest that in a way in which I do a space.
It's like a true story.
Yeah, this shit is a true story.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying. Like, I can't run off and do like a sushi restaurant. Yeah. It's not my life.
It's not true to who you are.
Yeah, it's not my life. And it will be forced. And I see so many people, they cast a wide net because they really trying to force it. So you like, you know, you might call somebody to cut hair, like, you cut hair? Oh, I cut all type of hair.
yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So yeah, that was important for me to kind of narrow it down and keep things authentic.
All right. Well, so now we had the backstory, but more importantly, we're gonna go into the business side of things, how to run a business, how to have a successful business, your day-to-day operations. As I said, you went from making $0 to $1 million a year in revenue. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, okay, well, how? How does that work? How does that happen? And so we about to give you guys some free game. All right. So now we told kind of the backstory, but now we're going to go to the day-to-day operations because, like I said, it's one thing to actually tell a story about you have a business, you have a successful business and support the business. Okay, we get that. But people are saying, okay, how do I do this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the first thing, the biggest issue that any entrepreneur, any business, any person, period, but definitely in business has is funding, financing, right? So you mentioned your story as far as having a certain amount of money when you started and buying it. So how did you go about funding your operation? Like, what's your personal story for that?
Yeah, so for me, it always starts with sacrifice and try not to look cute. So, like I told you, I stayed with my father for 6 months.
Right.
So the 6 months that I saved my father, I ain't paid nothing. So now I come home, I'm training people, I'm taking cash. I'm taking cash or personal check. I'm training all on by myself. I cut out the middle, man. I accumulated all this money, and now I'm able to build out this restaurant, this idea. So that's how I was able to gross the 100 grand, because I'm going through 6 months of training, and then beyond the 6 months, now I get an apartment, but then I keep my expenses real low. And then I'm hoarding cash in preparation of something big. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, Troy, you got a question?
So we got the 100,000, and now the one of the key parts of business is location, location, location.
Yeah, locality. Yeah.
So you are located in what part of Baltimore?
I'm located in the Federal Hill Locust Point part of Baltimore, which is directly, like, you can see the harbor from my restaurant.
And you chose that location. Why is that?
I always like to choose more affluent white neighborhoods, just to be honest with you. The reason why is because I like to come in the neighborhood and kind of what they call it, gentrified.
Yeah.
I like to fucking up. The reason why is because, like, yo, it's not enough of that. So the reason why I got into the brunch, because I'm like, yo, I want to do something that's a different model for us, because it's easy for them to see me pushing pig feet or chitlins, or, you know what I mean? But I wanted to do something that's very sophisticated, very elegant.
You got a crab shop.
Very upper crust. Yeah. So, and I always believe in fighting the odds. So I felt like I can do it in a white neighborhood. Yeah. I felt like as long as you bring value to the marketplace and you do something that's extremely exceptional, people will come.
Yeah. I think one of the brilliant things that you're doing is you specialize in an area, right? Where a lot of restaurants will say they'll try to be everything for everyone and please every customer that they have. And you guys are like, hey, we do breakfast and we do lunch and we do it great. And it's a whole experience. I think that's one of the brilliant about. Were you guys digging that going into
it? Yeah, I feel like as an African-American business owner, you can't cast a wide net because the whole world isn't your oyster. It's a different piece for you.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? It's a total different piece. So for me, I felt like I had to speak directly into the voice of the people who I knew would support me. And then you also have to know how to grow your business laterally. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times we go outside the scope of our business and try to reel in people who aren't interested in us.
Right.
Be interested in the people who are interested in you. So that was easy for me to be able to focus down on a handful of things. Like, I know millennial black women not trying to eat avocado toast and sushi all day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I know that they do partake in that as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But for me, it was always about what made sense for the culture and the brand. And not and doing things with a certain sense of timelessness and a certain level of purpose where I can pass it off to my kids.
Right.
I'm proud of my brand. I'm proud of the storefront. I'm proud of the trucks. And I know that it's something that can be bequeathed.
So it's interesting because your restaurant is only open 3 days a week, right?
Yeah.
Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah.
But you're still profitable, right?
Yeah.
So how are you able to make a profit when it's only open 3 days a week? Like, can you talk about the actual business model behind it?
Yeah, I treat the model. So, you know, from the time that I was young, like you kind of guys, I familiarize you with, you know, my story about when we being young. I always had a model of cutting out the middleman, right? So, like, if you take my restaurant, I sell breakfast and brunch. How many times have you been to brunch on a Monday morning?
Never been.
Right. So now I'm in an industry in which 70% of my customer base is going to come Saturday or Sunday, right?
Right.
And then I'm in a white neighborhood, so a lot of my clientele was black, which means that they drove to the restaurant, right? I don't have parking, so you drove. You had to go out of your way, you know, and then from when you finally get in there, you're looking for an experience. And that can't happen in 30 minutes. So being able to really identify who my customers are and what they want allow me to really focus on just a small niche audience. So most people can admit they haven't been to a brunch on Tuesday unless you live in LA and you like wealthy and shit. You know what I mean?
You got some spare time. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like it was easier for me to be able to figure out what really meant some. Also, several pieces to it. I don't have to cut labor. Everybody come in on the same time. Everybody get paid the same amount of thing.
Yeah.
They can go home. I can kind of gauge the labor in that way. No food goes to waste. We run everything in small batch. And when we're out of things, we're out of things because people understand the concept, right?
Yeah.
So those things really made sense. And then also, I knew that it would create an allure in the sense that people would want to come there and it would foundationally be a destination place.
Yeah.
So it's like now everybody got to cram in these 2 days for this place that's really remarkable.
Yeah, it's like a limited quantity of
It's limited quantity, yeah.
That's interesting.
You know, that approach and that model is pretty brilliant. And the fact that y'all is doing it, because one of the fastest growing chains in America is called First Watch. It's like this restaurant chain. And they have a similar model where they specialize just in breakfast and brunch.
Yeah.
But they're only open from 7 to 2:30. And their thing was like the same thing you said. It's like the work quality of it, like everybody loves coming because there's one shift. And
then
the employee retention rate is great because people have work-home balance where they can get home.
Yeah, it provides a level of liberation.
Pick their kids up and they can still make dinner. And everybody loves it. So like that's interesting that you guys are doing because it seems to be a trend that's going to start happening in our country.
Yeah.
And also, all right, so because in this show, so a lot of shows I watch on YouTube, like I watch these gurus, quote unquote gurus on YouTube for 45 minutes, and I don't know what I actually watched at the end of it. Like it's they talk in circles for 45 minutes, and then it's like, okay, subscribe to my private YouTube channel for a premium $900 a month or go to my seminar. So it's like we're gonna give you the straight blueprint of how to be successful.
Yeah.
Whether you take it or not, it's up to you, but we want to give you all the tools that you need to be successful. So can we talk about as far as like revenue, like how your revenue model actually works?
Yeah,
as far as
because
the thing about it is that, especially in the black community, how I see it, is that entrepreneurs, we have three types of businesses that we always aspire to be, right?
Let's do the list.
Barbershop, hair salon.
Number one.
That's number one, right? And then clothing store.
Yep.
And then a restaurant. I don't know why, but everybody's dream to have a restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one of the hardest businesses to actually be successful in. Like, yeah. I think like 95% of restaurants fail.
We kind of came to the conclusion that it's a status thing. But
your
model
But yours is actually working.
It's working, right? And it's still a status thing.
Yeah.
So we're talking about revenue and like how, yeah. Can
you all break right, so in the restaurant industry, just specifically in my industry, you have three general costs, which is you have labor costs, you have food costs, and then you have overhead, right? So overhead are the fixed costs, which is the cost of the building, operating expenses, whether it's trash removal, grease removal, gas and electric, your cable, things like that. Those things won't go away, they're fixed, right? And then you have labor costs, which is obviously the cost of having people on staff that can efficiently execute whatever it is that you want to do. And then you have food costs. So I scaled the model in a way in which the profit was already built in. So it was, I like to call it winning at the table. So I went at the table. Like, for example, with me, my highest price selling item is the chicken and waffle, but it's the most highly consumed item. A lot of times people who are in the restaurant industry, they tend to sell things because they have an allure to them, or they look really nice, or they think it's going to attract a certain crowd of people, not considering food costs. Mm. Food costs can really sink the ship if you don't really focus on that. My fixed costs and my labor costs are below the industry standard. So, like, say, for example, let's take a chicken and waffle, for example, right? And I say, all right, it takes me $2 to make this chicken and waffle. And I'll ask a young kid, so what are you selling for? They sell $6. Why? Because that's what I thought I should sell it for. Versus, like, if you take me, I'll take the chicken and waffle at $2, and I know I want my food cost to be 20%, right? So I times it by 5. So I've already won at the table. Yeah. I don't have to make an assumption. But then I might add a $2 margin on it and sell it for $12. Why? Because now you're going to take utensils, you're going to want syrup to go.
Yeah.
You know, it might be a situation where they might burn your chicken and waffle, and then you got to make another.
Yeah.
So you have to win at the table. In my industry, the margin is about 5 to 6% for the owner of what you'll typically make, what you'll typically net. I'm netting maybe 25-30%. So I'll break the model down. It's real simple. My fixed cost weekly is $700. Between the supper club and homemade brunch, we gross anywhere from 15 to 20 grand. My food cost is 20%. So let's take the 20 grand, which is the higher number, right? So my food cost is 20%. That means that 4%, 4,000 goes to food, right? I already told you that my fixed cost was 700. Right, which leaves me roughly at 4,700. That leaves me at 15,300. Right, I run a 7-man band. I pay all of them a salary, so all 7 people get $700 a piece. That's 4,900. Right, that leaves me with 10 grand gross.
Mm-hmm.
By the time net and all that is extracted, maybe I might walk away with 7,500, maybe 8 grand. You know, considering that I got state taxes and I also got my personal income tax. So now, how is it that I'm able to make $350,000? A year when we only grossing $1 million. But in a typical restaurant, for me to make $350,000 a year, I had to gross $5 million.
Right.
It's a winning model. Why? Because my fixed costs are lower. Why? Because my food costs have already been priced out, so I made sure I went at the table. And then I put all my employees on a salary wage, that way I don't get caught up in hourly and dollars. So it makes sense for us, like right now.
Blueprint. That's
yo, I hope notes were just taken.
I don't even think y'all fully appreciate. First of all, I want to thank you for saying that, because a lot of times people, they don't give the blueprint, right? Or they don't, they're like stingy with their numbers, or they're like, it's hidden secret. So I want you to fully appreciate.
That's just the store too. That don't include the trucks.
That's not even including the trucks. I want y'all to fully appreciate somebody just coming in and laying it on the table, right? Like I said, I don't know what else we can do. Like we're trying to help you out as best way we possibly can, but it's important to have a plan. That's the thing I like. When we spoke on the phone, you have a plan in place, right?
Then another quick piece I will advise people to really focus on, too, is play small ball for a while. Don't get so caught up on perception of what people think. So, like, for example, if you were to say, Derek, well, how would you scale your brand if you had no money? Let me give you that, right? So, all right, for example, if I had no money and I had the same food, what I would do is I would do a pop-up. And I would do collabs.
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? Like, say, for example, you guys have a podcast. I'm sure you got to eat eventually. And I would say, well, let me pop up at the podcast, bring some attention to my brand, and I'll make you guys chicken and waffles, right? Pop-ups create collabs because now I draw attention to who you are. So the things that you can focus on, which are free, which is your content that you can produce and put out, right? The image of your brand and the projections and the messages that you convey, and then the relationships that you can create based off of the content that you created, which can allow you to further parlay your brand. And that's the reason why I'm here. So now those collabs create situations where now you can generate enough money to maybe not get a restaurant, a brick and mortar, but maybe a food truck, maybe a car. And then the cart generates flow. You have to understand that flow is data. So all the customers who come into my restaurant, I make sure that they're aware that I have a supper club. I make sure that they connect with me through social media. I make sure I got your phone number and I make sure I got your email. So now I'm texting you pictures of the chicken and waffle while you're at work all day. You know what I'm saying? Yep. And I'm creating that flow. There's another concept that we execute from time to time called a brunch and go, a brunch pop-up, of which I can show pictures of my meals, right? And I can send them out, I can mass text them. You guys can order them through the Cash App, and then you can come pick them up from my house.
Yeah.
That's a very effective, very efficient, very clean way in which you don't have any waste, you don't have any overhead, you don't have any labor. It's easy to scale the brand that way.
Yeah, and that's like one of the things, that, again, that we're starting to see the restaurant industry grow to is like these ghost restaurants or these stay-at-home restaurants where people are making them based on their orders. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And Chick-fil-A actually just created two fulfillment centers where it's just delivery. So you order and they just ship it to you. Again, it saves money on food costs because we're only making it when somebody orders it.
Yeah.
And the data, like you said, that's important.
Now, the data. What did you say again? You said data is, you said something. Data is information.
I'll say it to say this. Be interested in the people who are interested in you. So like case in point. You and your wife come into the restaurant, right? Mm-hmm. It's four of you guys. So I've already bought you in. So it's easier for me to sell laterally, which means that now I can collect data from you and say, look, I know you're interested in a brunch. How would you feel about a supper? How would you feel about a wedding? How would you feel about an event? And then grow your business laterally with the people who are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that my first store, and just being raw and being real, that, you know, I thought I had all these great products and I thought that people needed them. So I would go outside to the people who I felt needed them and they weren't interested in them. But you guys are sitting here right now and you want them. And it's easier for me to be able to grow my brand. Also, in terms of wealth accumulation, it's always easy to grow laterally so that you can accumulate wealth. What do I mean by that? Meaning, like, as opposed to me getting seven stores, I could find seven streams in one store.
Right.
So now you got to realize that I can coach, I can consult, I can speak. I got the restaurant, I got the food truck, I got events, I got the brunch and go. That's seven streams of income. The average millionaire got 6 to 7 streams of income.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need anything else for me to get wealthy. I just need to perfect the things that I'm doing.
Perfect your craft.
Yeah, you have it right where you are.
All right. So the next topic we're going to go to is scaling your business and taking your business to the next level.
Yeah.
All right. So now you have the backstory. You have the current story. But we're going to take it to the next level. So before I even start, we were kind of debating whether we're going to do the last segment on some other stuff that's in the news right now. It's entertaining, but this is more important, right?
This is so, like the blueprint.
Yeah,
series.
We're gonna get back to that next week. We're gonna give you some more entertaining stories next week. But this is something that you can actually utilize in your day to day life and be successful and make some money. So we thought that this would be more important to cover for the last segment. So now we're gonna go into how to scale your business, right? Because it's one thing to have a business, it's another thing to have a successful business, and it's another thing to have a successful business that can run without you and can grow into multiple locations and you can actually make some money from, because we know that most entrepreneurs aren't really making money. They're struggling, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So scalability.
Yeah.
What's your ideas on scalability?
All right. So for me, it always starts with the end in mind. You know what I mean? So the only way that you can scale is know where you're trying to go. Always related to, like, if we get out of here right now, we all going somewhere. Whether it's a red light, whether a deer run across the road, whether it's a stop sign, you continue to go.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of entrepreneurs are just starting. So it's like you start the ignition up to the car and like now you're waiting. No one's going to give you direction because we don't have any mentors. Speaking from an African-American perspective, you know what I'm saying? So in terms of the scalability of the brand, you have to have a vision as to how you see opportunity in your industry for you to be able to grow in perpetuity. So it always start for me with my grandkids. So like we say, I don't hustle for my first name, I hustle for my last, right? So like, why get the trucks? Because the stores, I already told you the store model, right? So the trucks are for my grandkids.
Right.
So when it comes to scaling your brand, you have to be focused on a handful of things. You have to have low overhead. You know what I'm saying? You have to know how to grow to your brand laterally in a way in which that you can generate multiple streams without no more cars. So like, okay, I did the supper club. So let's talk about the supper club. Well, if you look at the supper club menu, right? I got lamb chops, broccolini, and asparagus, right? But it's the same lamb chops that's with eggs and potatoes at the brunch. So I'm not selling anything else. If you don't buy that brunch, I'm going to dim the lights down. You're going to buy it tonight.
You know what I'm saying? You're not going to reinvent this.
Yeah, so you know what I'm saying? It's like we have to understand what it's going to take. So I think low overhead is key. I think bringing in partnerships, creating partnerships is definitely key for black businesses. If you don't create partnerships, the days of being self-employed and sitting in your house doing someone's taxes and thinking you're going to be on the Fortune 500, it's over with.
Yeah, that's a very
important. Yeah, you can start that partnership, yeah. Collaboration.
A lot of times in our community, we are so hesitant to work with each other because it's like, I want to make it out. Not knowing that if we look across, like, that person's trying to make it too. If we work
together. Like I told you, like, with the supper club, it's Randy Problay, who's a partner of mine, and Kevin Vaughn. These gentlemen have come on and endured the stresses of starting up something new. But I've gotten better and better, too. So constantly challenging myself. Like, when I built out the first restaurant, it was 6 months. The second one was 4 months. I built out the supper club in 40 days. Mm. I'm talking about we had no menu. We had nothing. We just had a general feel and a message that we wanted to deliver, and we built off of that. So in order for you to scale your brand, it's going to definitely take collaborations, especially if you're black. It's definitely going to take minimal overhead, doing as much sweat equity as you can, to make sure that everything kind of remains intact in terms of financing, but then also coming under the fold of someone who's greater than yourself. Like for me, I'm in a rare space because it's no black 5-star restaurants in Baltimore. So I kind of set the standard for what it's to be, but also I have to navigate through a lot of valleys and hills first.
Yeah.
So like I always equated to like cowboys and Indians where like, you know, the cowboy would look out and all the Indians would shoot him with the bow and arrows. I got to get shot first.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to do that if it provides a gateway or a path for you. So it's more specifically when it comes to scaling businesses, I think that you have to have a plan and a way in which you see yourself in that business years from now. So always think about your grandkids and then reverse engineer. So, like, that's what I do when I solve problems in my business. I don't focus on the shit that's good. Like, oh, the food is nice and, you know, the decor is nice. But what about the fact that every week when they say they come here, they feel like the lines are too long? Or, you know, maybe they all want hot syrup with the pancake instead of just, you know, room temperature syrup. So I think you got to reverse engineer. So it all goes into how you see it. So in terms of my business model, we all know I got the real estate piece. So it's a mixed-use property. It's commercial downstairs.
Yeah, can you talk about that? I don't think we talk about that.
Okay, so it's real simple with my piece. You know what I'm saying? So I have a mixed-use property, right, which means that it's commercial slash residential. There are tenants upstairs. The tenants pay the rent upstairs. And now I have to deal with the rest of it downstairs, which leaves me with a minimal to no overhead because now you have people who've leveraged the cost. So I speak to entrepreneurs who have a brick and mortar.
Yes.
Find other ways to use what you already have outside instead of going outside of the scope of what you're doing. So like say if you have a beauty salon and then you can allow someone to double it and use the space as a barbershop. Stop getting so caught up in the thick of really thin things. I call it we major in minor things. So black people, we tend to major in minor things and we make things that are really important. We sit them behind the minor thing. Like, what are people going to think of me versus creating wealth?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? How am I going to be perceived if I rent my space? It's going to be perceived like I don't got money.
Or the business
versus,
is not doing that
versus well. The additional income.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe I might not want to just stuff the lamb chops with lobster this week to save a dollar. You know what I'm saying? So those things are extremely important. How we look is extremely, like, it's a very big thing to us. But whereas for me, it was like, yo, when I first started my brand, like I told you, I came into the game with $100,000, right?
Yeah.
I could have gotten caught up in ego and been like, well, I'm not going to clear this plate or I'm not going to wash these dishes because this is not what counts. But I think the division always allows you to surmount. So even when you busting tables, you thinking about, I'm going to have 8 locations in 10 years. So what does it matter?
Long-term.
Or you thinking about your last name. Think about the long term. Keep the overhead low. Focus on collaborations and get under people who have more knowledge than you.
Now, that's me. Just 1 minute before you go, Troy. Because what you said was very important. And I don't want that to go over people's heads. So you're making money from the tenants upstairs. And that's pretty much covering the cost of the restaurant. So that saves you a lot.
Yeah, the tenants upstairs cover about roughly 60% of the note.
So that's important to understand because you have to find creative ways to leverage.
And that's the scaling model in general. So when people come to me and they say, well, Doug, I think you look great in the strip mall, the shopping center. It don't fit the model. So the only way I could grow my brand is through mixed-use properties that are townhouses or apartments in which I'm at the bottom. That's what that looks like. So now let's really think about it and break it down. It's no longer a restaurant play. It's a real estate play.
Yeah.
So that's the key.
So some of the things that people want to know is like, what are the qualities you need to be an owner? So we did a little research and likability is one, being able to multitask, being able to delegate. And one of the most interesting things I read was being able to thrive under stressful conditions. And I think that gets overlooked. You want to talk about some of the setbacks?
Stresses. Yeah, the stress.
The stress.
Yeah, it's never all good.
It's never all good. For me, yeah. I mean, especially as a black person, because, you know, my restaurant is all black. You know, the staff is black. We hire any and everyone who's qualified, but I focus on black, you know, because we need it. Mm-hmm. So they the hardest to work with. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, they the hardest to work with. And the reason why is because we don't have models. So, like, when you got models, you can buy anything. So I always speak. I generally mentor and I hire mostly young black men. They the hardest to deal with because they don't buy into anything because they can't say, well, Derek, your dad is a third generation restaurateur, and we've seen you guys come through the ranks because my dad worked for your dad, and now I can believe in this. Right. But we tend to believe in Nordstrom's because it's 55 or 80 locations and they got billions of dollars and they're going to give you all these wages and all this shit is going to be promised to you. So you tend to focus on today. It's very difficult as a black entrepreneur because we get the most resistance from our people. So I'll explain to you what I mean when I say that. Let's talk about consumerism. So that's something that's big to me, right? Versus support. Well, I support black business. Well, support is more of a philanthropic thing. So if you see that I'm doing what I'm doing, or you decide to cash at me, or you know someone that might be in my industry who can help provide an additional service or more mentorship, then that's support. But if you come to me and you pay for a chicken and waffle because it's great, because you like it, then that's consumption. And we really have to educate the consumers on what consumption really means. Support doesn't mean that because you came to my restaurant and you spent some money, you supported me. No, because I didn't have to drag you up to support Mercedes. Right. You got a Mercedes outside. Yeah. You ain't had to say, oh, you lucky I came in here and supported y'all. You know, right. You don't, right?
3 years, I'll see you again.
Yeah, but with us, it's a certain level of like.
You owe me.
Yeah, you owe me. You know, entitlement. Entitlement comes with it. So with that entitlement, we have to understand what that looks like too, because, okay, this is another way in which you can scale black businesses. A robust top line. You got to make sure that you funnel any and every dollar, not just you come by the chicken and waffle, keep doing your thing, bro. Hey, appreciate you, sis. Y'all have a good one. No, really piling that shit on. Yeah. Your mother birthday, Valentine's Day, your anniversary. Add to your kids' soccer game. Dump it on because it will allow us to make a certain amount of money and then we'll overcome obstacles, we'll surmount mistakes, and we can scale. Because, I mean, it really all boils down to sales.
Yeah.
For real. I can scale. I can have a mediocre business, but if I'm generating a lot of sales, then I can scale. McDonald's. They don't got the best burger you ever had, but they got a system. They got a consistent flow, and scalability looks likely.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Versus your uncle, he make a great burger, but you go once in a while.
Yeah.
You got to keep going. You got to keep going and going and going and going and going. And you got to also understand that these businesses are in a different place than most businesses. So you're going to have to endure failures as a customer. Like, for example, if I'm working on an iPhone and it ain't working out, I could take that shit back to a research lab and figure it out.
Yeah.
Versus if I say, look, I'm going to try this new syrup this weekend. It directly goes on your plate and it has a direct effect on you as a customer, which can come directly back to me. So those things are important. A robust top line, and patience, you know?
Yeah. We want to thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
And to being so honest and opening up, you know, your playbook, right? Because you didn't have to do that, right? And this is something, like I said, with this show, we're taking a unique approach to it where we really want to educate, you know? And I think that entrepreneurship is something that's very important. And even in college, right? Like, they don't teach you this certain stuff in business school and stuff like that. So to hear it from a real world perspective and somebody that, you know, people can relate to, somebody from the community, somebody from the neighborhood, is it's encouraging. And it's also, it's important. It's important.
And for those of us who are in culinary school and like can't figure it out, like, this is, you built this from the ground up.
Yeah.
There was no formal school that you went to, right? Yeah. You built this from the ground up based off experiences.
Yeah.
And one avenue just resonated into another one. You know what I mean? Yeah. One medium, you took some ethics and some morals and you brought it to a different one. And that's powerful.
And it's also, I'm not to cut you off, but it's also can be related to any business, not just restaurants, right? So we're talking about the restaurant business today because you own a restaurant. But the business model and the ideas and the general principles of business can be applied to anything. Like you said, whether it's a hair salon, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a sneaker store, no matter what it is, You see, I just named those three different things that I talked about before, right?
You added a sneaker store.
A clothing store. So no matter what it is, it can be applied to. So that's something that's important.
And you got to respect the entrepreneur, too, because like that's another thing I don't really feel like I touched on enough. Like, black people, you know, I like to speak to them. Yeah, so black people, like, you know, from the consumption side, understand what it looks like when a black person is establishing a business or entity and what it's going to take for you to grow them. But more specifically, young black people who work for black people know what that takes to be able to build out that brand. Dedicate your sweat equity to those companies because they need you more than the white entities. Right? We talk about it all the time. Ruth Chris rich enough. Nordstrom's rich enough. Macy's rich enough. So it's so crazy because like when you're speaking about the culinary school, the young black kids come out the culinary school, they want to work for the fucking Four Seasons. Mm. And you like, yo, you ain't never think to allocate. Even my customers come in the store, right? Your son will come out of culinary school. You'll let him work for the Four Seasons. But your cousin who getting out of jail, you pull me straight up. Yeah, look, man, just to let you know, my cousin just got out of the joint. He need a job. Yeah. But what about your daughter? She got a master's degree. She need a job.
Yeah.
Nah, it's a fact.
Yeah, she need a job. Yeah. Stop sending out, in some cases, I would say worst potential at your best talent because we don't do that with LeBron and all them. When we see that a young black kid is, he's 15 years old and he's 6'9 and he could dribble.
We got to make sure he
we clamoring like, yo, keep him out of trouble and make sure he get home. Yeah. But when you see the young black entrepreneur who's 20 years old, who's selling nachos, you know, like my young man Killer from Nacho Bank, he's selling nachos, you throw him to the wolves.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, my cousin, my uncle, my cracky uncle, can he sweep the steps up? No, stop doing that because they do that all the time. They tend to undermine the value of our entrepreneurs where and essentially our entrepreneurs and our creatives are the future because I don't give a fuck how high he could jump. Eventually, he got to retire. I don't give a fuck how fast he runs. Somebody going to run fast. That business is forever. It could last in perpetuity. The duration of a business can go on for generations.
Right.
It could go on for decades. So a person can do business up until the time they 85, 90. We still got 90-year-old CEOs and shit. Like Al Davis who ran the Raiders until he was like fucking 90. So then he died, right? Yeah, then like a Jerry Jones. That shit go on forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, the musicians, the creatives, the entrepreneurs, they have to be supported the same way the athletes are supported. I'm not taking anything away from the athletes. But to me personally, I feel if my son could read and he could assimilate information and he could impart that information out and he could get his ideas out to the world, that he could make more money than LeBron James. He could create more opportunity for people than LeBron James and he could give more back. Cause that's not really talked about either. That whole, yo, what it look like to work for the black man? What it look like to be the black man who owned it? And then what it look like to consume from the black man? Ain't three different perspectives.
That's a fact. It's a fact. We're going to have to do a follow-up. We got to do a follow-up. We can go on all day. But once again, man, we want to thank you for coming in. We appreciate you coming. And yeah, we want to encourage everybody to, keep hitting us up. Cause this is an example. Like I said, we said we was going to bring on entrepreneur, highlight a business that you can support in real life, right? And make sure you support the business. Can you just tell the people the information for?
Yeah, so the name of the restaurant is Homemade, HOMEMAID, and we are on social media under Homemade _. We are located at 1400 Key Highway in Baltimore, Maryland, 21230. The hours are Friday from 6 to 11. We run a supper club. We run a brunch on Saturday morning from 9 to 4, of which we run a supper following that from 6 to 11. And then we also have another brunch on Sunday, which is a really big deal. The whole city come up.
So if you're in Baltimore, if you're in D.C., if you're in the area, show your love, man. Stop by. Show us your social support, man. I'm definitely going to come through.
Yeah, we're going to be back in Baltimore very soon.
That's a fact. Before we wrap it up, though, I want to talk about the merch.
Don't forget
the merch, guys. Like I said, we have new merch up. We have dope shirts, hoodies, V-necks for the ladies. We got all kinds of stuff. Dad hats.
We got them in a few colors.
Camouflage.
They were like, yo, I need one in white. So, you know, it's nothing for us to just add the color.
It's important. And especially, like I said, in our culture, we make statements by what we wear.
Right.
So we complain about Gucci. We complain about all these clothing companies that we know don't care about us. So why don't we make statements with our clothes as well? So all of the clothes has financial literacy on it. So you talk about like Hustle for Your Last Name. That's one of the shirts. Hustle for Your Last Name. I got the Assets Over Liability shirt. Troy has a signature shirt. So it's always something. It's going to be a message in the clothing. So make sure you support that. And then also our Patreon. You want to take a minute?
Yeah, about Patreon. Like I said, we got some new features that are going up on there. A new topic that we're going to be doing called Hometown Heroes, where we're going to be highlighting some people who are doing things in your hometown or in our hometown. We got some people up there already. I told you our goal is to reach 100. And then when we get there, we're going to start calling people to have an hour conversation with them. We're going to choose 5 people from our page, our Patreon page. So keep checking that out. Keep supporting that. Keep subscribing to our YouTube. We're doing all right on YouTube.
YouTube. Yeah. Subscribe to the YouTube though. Yeah. And yeah, the Patreon is, Nipsey Hussle, right? He's our guy.
Yeah.
So he had a campaign called Proud to Pay, right? Where we're going to give you the information for free. But if you would like to financially support the podcast so we can travel to different cities and we can bring on other entrepreneurs and we can do different things that we want to do, it's a way to be proud to pay and financially support us and financially support the podcast. It's not supporting us, it's supporting the podcast.
Right.
So we can spread the message of financial literacy to the world.
Yeah. And but you know what we haven't done and we should have. There's some people behind the scenes who work on our podcast as well.
Oh, that's a fact.
So let's give them a little bit of time. So shout out to Sid. You know, he does all the magic. He makes them sound great.
There's no podcast without that's a fact. That's a fact.
Shout out to Sid.
That's a fact.
Shout out to Larry, Mike, Bam. So those guys behind the scenes that are working to make this thing, you know, take off.
And that's important.
We don't
to
want
say
them to go unnoticed.
You can't. Nothing great is ever done by yourself. Right. And we talked about collaboration. Like, it's important. You can only go so far. I used to play sports, so I'm big on team. You can only go so far as an individual. You have to surround yourself with good people and you have to be humble enough to be able to work with good people. So, yes, there's no podcast. You see me and Troy, but there's no podcast without the other three gentlemen that he just named. And there's no podcast without you guys actually tuning in and supporting us. So we appreciate it. And before we leave, I say a book that I read or I'm reading. So, my book tip of this week is 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene. I've read that book 3 times. Very, very good book. You've read that book before?
Yeah, I read that.
Yeah, I figured you did. Did you? Yeah. You didn't read it.
I didn't read that. I had my book, which is The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander.
That's another good book.
Just because I'm working on something right now in the school district where we're going to be combating that. School to prison pipeline.
We got something special about that for sure. Yeah. So, all right, guys. Thank you for rocking with us. Another episode, another monumental episode in the books. Hopefully you guys learned something that you can apply to your real life. And we will see you guys next week. Peace.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.